Let's do it.
This is it, guys.
This is the last one.
This is our last episode.
Not for
ever. Not forever. This is our last episode of our recording session for February 3rd. It is 7:04 p.m. and we are recording the last one.
Yeah.
And then guess what? We're going to do it again in March.
Yeah. So.
Or at the end of this month. I don't know.
Well.
Probably March.
Probably March, because that's when we'll need more episodes.
I don't know. I normally don't know when we need more episodes until you tell me when we need more. Like, once we, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, once we get it all planned out, like, once I get home and I look at the calendar, you know? Because, like, January was weird because January technically had 5 weeks. So we needed more episodes in January than we did for December.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me check.
I realized that when I was recording Evil Whispers that it was ridiculous. I was like, I have to have 5 Patreon episodes because there's 5 Wednesdays. What's up with that?
Yeah, let me check. So we currently have...
I think we're to February 15th.
We have 4 more that will be posted, which brings us to February 15th. So let me check.
We're going to check calendar. Here. We're just being nosy 1, now.
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. So after we record this one, we'll be scheduled out until March 14th.
The day before my birthday!
Yeah. Well, we wouldn't post on your birthday. So huh? We wouldn't post on your birthday.
I know.
It's a Friday.
But it's the day before my birthday.
Yeah, so you'll know that we're
dun, dun, dun.
We're scheduled until then.
So we can go ahead and say we're probably going to be recording the first weekend in March.
Most likely. But yes.
Most likely.
Hi, everybody. I'm Sarah.
I'm Alicia.
And this is
Sinister States. Did we do this the last episode? I don't even remember if we did it.
We did.
You sure?
Well, if we didn't, it's too late now.
Yeah, it's too late now. If we didn't say an intro last time, we're sorry, folks.
I mean, I'm not sorry, because at this point, you should know who we are, but if
Sarah's
you don't...
like, I'm sorry, I'm not sorry. Remember that song back in the day?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm tired.
We're tired.
We're in New Hampshire still.
We're in New Hampshire. I'm trying to keep it upbeat over here, okay?
I'm about to lay on Zora's bunk bed.
Sarah's going to take a nap.
Oh,
well,
I'm not going to take a nap.
She's going to take a rest. I was resting earlier. She's taking a little layback. Her floor is carpeted, so it's comfy. Comfy carpet. Okay, so I'm going to go over our missing people.
Yay.
Because I have 2.
Oh, you have a dual one?
I have a dual one. They're brothers.
Oh, sad.
Out of New Hampshire, of course. So we have William Martin Vossler. Vossler. And Charles Jason Vossler. So they both went missing October 9th, 1986. So I'm going to go over William's information first. So William disappeared, of course, or they both disappeared October 9th, 1986. What am I talking about? He was born April 21st, 1984, and he was 2 years old at the time. Present day, he would be 39 years old, okay? At that time, they have him listed as being 3 foot. I feel like 3 foot tall for a 2 year old. But 36 pounds. And his distinguishing characteristics are a Caucasian male with brown hair, blue eyes. And William may use the last names of Amden, Foster, and or Wilson. And his nickname is Billy. And then we have Charles Jason Vossler, who's also missing October 9th, 1986 from Rochester, New Hampshire. I'm not sure if I said that earlier. If I didn't, my bad. His date of birth is December 9th, 1982. So he would currently be 41. At the time of his disappearance, he was 3. So they were 2 and 3 when they disappeared. His characteristics are he's a Caucasian male with blonde hair, blue eyes. And he may also use the last names Admin, Foster, and or Wilson. And he goes by his initials of CJ, or he did at the time of his disappearance. So William and his brother Charles disappeared from Rochester, New Hampshire on October 9th, 1986. They were abducted by their non-custodial father, Charles Martin Vossler Jr., and a federal warrant for unlawful flight to avoid prosecution was issued for him on April 3rd, 1987. The state of New Hampshire issued warrants for him earlier on February 5th, 1987 for interference of custody. And a photograph and an age progress image of Charles Martin are posted with this case summary. His date of birth is March 6th, 1942, which made him 44 years old at the time of the children's abduction. He was described as a Caucasian male, 6'1", weighing 220 pounds when he disappeared. At that time, he had brown hair, blue eyes. Charles Martin's nickname is Charlie. He may use the middle names Malcolm or Martin, and the last names, of course, Admin Foster and or Wilson. He may use the alias dates of birth of March 6, 1943 or February 6, 1944. Charles Martin may wear glasses and or contact lenses, and his right eye twitches when he's stressed. He was born and raised in Connecticut and graduated from Coe College in Iowa with a bachelor's degree in economics. Economics, however you want to say it. I'm over today.
Same something.
Charles Martin told the boys' mother, Ruth Parker, that he was taking the children out of state for the weekend to visit relatives. After they didn't return, she went to the real estate office where Charles worked and discovered that he'd shut down the office and let all of his employees go. He'd taken all of Charles and William's photographs, as well as address books and credit cards and many of Parker's belongings. He had emptied the family's bank accounts and auctioned off a lot of things that the family had in storage. Parker later determined that Charles Martin had been planning the abduction for a long time, and he had removed her name from their joint checking accounts and stopped the automatic payments on her car. So by the time of the abduction, she was months behind in payments, and her car was about to be repossessed, and she didn't even know about it. Charles Martin had been married twice before, and when he divorced his first wife, he told her she was lucky they had no children, because he would have taken them away from her. A private investigator who has worked on the case believes Charles Martin deliberately selected Parker to bear his children because of her good background and her high intelligence, but he planned to keep the children for himself. The Vosslers may, at the time when he fled with them, they were traveling in a 1979 GMC Jimmy truck with Nebraska license plate number 2, R as in Robert, 6093, or the Virginia license plate number IBV565. And Charles Martin also has ties to Connecticut, New Jersey, Oklahoma, Pennsylvania, and Florida. In Stillwell, Oklahoma in 1987, a woman he was seeing recognized the boy's photos on a missing child poster and called a hotline about it. Charles was using the name Dr. Charles Wilson. He was saying he was a doctor.
Wow.
By the time authorities arrived to arrest him 9 days later, he had burned his house, his car, and other possessions and fled. He was known to have been in Oklahoma in December of 2006, but there has been no indication of this. He was known to have been in Oklahoma in December 2006, but there has been no indications of his, Charles, or William's whereabouts since then. Parker now lives in North Carolina and still hopes to hear from her children someday and wants to verify their well-being. Charles Martin is considered armed and dangerous, and caution is advised when approaching him or either of the boys. The children's case technically still remains unsolved at this time, so have a look. If you are listening and you might know these people, like, look, because these boys were taken when they were little. Mm-hmm. They may not even technically remember their mom.
Right.
So, but their mom is still looking for them.
Yeah.
And that's sad. I could, like, as a mom, I couldn't imagine.
No.
So, now we're going to get into the murderer. Forever known as the murderer.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever heard of Pamela Smart? Do you know who she is?
I know who she is.
You know who she is? Okay. Well, sorry. You should have told me. I would have found somebody else.
I don't know everything about her, but I know who she is.
So, born and raised in Coral Gables, Florida, Pamela Ann Wohoff had a close-knit family consisting of her parents and two siblings. Being the middle child, she shared a special bond with her older sister, Elizabeth, who was 6 years her senior.
Oh, I'm a liar. I know who Elizabeth Smart is.
Right. Okay. And her younger brother, John, who was 3 years younger.
Okay, wait. This Elizabeth is Smart and Pamela, they are the respective people that I would have heard about.
No,
right?
These are not who. This Elizabeth, is not that. This is not the same Elizabeth Smart.
No. Oh, then no, I don't know who Pamela Smart
is. So, her father's profession as a commercial airline pilot and her mother's part-time job as a legal secretary provided a stable and nurturing environment for Pamela's upbringing. However, Pamela's life took a turn when her family relocated to Windham, New Hampshire during her elementary school years. Adjusting to a new town and school, she quickly found her place at Pinkerton Academy in Derry, where she became a cheerleader and embraced the vibrant high school experience. Following her graduation, Pamela pursued higher education at Florida State University, where she excelled academically and graduated with honors in 1988. Her passion for heavy metal music also found an outlet during her college years, as she hosted a popular radio show called Metal Madness under the pseudonym Maiden of Metal at WVFS. I'm assuming that's some kind of Florida State. Mm-hmm. Pamela's journey from a small town in Florida to becoming a successful college graduate with a thriving radio career showcased her determination and love for both music and education. So, Pamela Wohlhaas and Gregory Smart's paths crossed at a vibrant New Year's Eve celebration in 1986. Little did they know that this chance encounter would lead to a deep and meaningful connection. As the calendar flipped to February 1987, their bond grew stronger and they decided to embark on a journey of love together.
Cute.
Yeah. 2 years later, they sealed their commitment with a beautiful wedding ceremony, promising to stand by each other through thick and thin.
I just realized that her maiden name is not Smart. So yeah. The fact that I thought that she was related to Elizabeth Smart makes no sense.
It's all good.
Sorry.
And, well, I mean, the name, yeah, I mean, it. Listen, it all runs together. So, beyond their love for each other, Pamela and Gregory discovered a shared passion for heavy metal music, which became the soundtrack to their lives. In a heartfelt gesture, Gregory surprised Pamela with a delightful Shih Tzu puppy. A furry companion that would bring joy and companionship to their home. Pamela, being a devoted fan to the iconic rock group Van Halen, decided to name their adorable little puppy Halen as a tribute to her favorite band. However, as time went on, cracks began to appear in their once harmonious relationship. 7 months into their marriage, Pamela and Gregory faced significant challenges that put a strain on their bond. Despite the difficulties, Pamela remained determined to pursue her career aspirations and took a role of the media coordinator at Winnicott High School in Hampton, New Hampshire. So they're in New Hampshire at this point.
Mm-hmm.
This new chapter in her professional life would not only provide her with a sense of fulfillment, but also serve as a source of, like, extra income and, you know, all that.
Mm-hmm.
This is where it gets weird. Billy Flynn, a sophomore at Winnicott High School, crossed paths with Pamela at an event called Project Self-Esteem. This event aimed at raising awareness about drug abuse and brought volunteers from the school community. It was during this program that Smart's passion for heavy metal music caught Billy's attention. In addition to Billy, Smart also had the pleasure of meeting Cecilia Pierce, another intern who happened to be friends with Billy. Throughout the sessions, Billy went above and beyond to lend a helping hand, always going out of his way to assist others. His dedication didn't stop there, as he made it a point to start visiting Pamela in her office every day.
That's creepy.
Well, they thought, like, everybody thought it was...
He's a student, or is he an intern?
He's a student. Okay. Everybody thought, like, he's a sophomore at the school.
So he's, like 15 years old.
Right. So at that point, they thought this genuine connection between Smart and Billy was, you know, showcasing the positive impact that this Project Self-Esteem had on fostering relationship and building a supportive community within the high school. Like, they thought it was just... Because at this point, you got to think, this is the early 90s, you don't think of... We didn't even have, what's her name at that point? What was her name?
Who?
Mary Kay. We didn't even have Mary Kay Letourneau at that point.
Who?
Mary Kay Letourneau.
Who's that?
Oh, never mind. Mary Kay Letourneau was the one that got knocked up by the 12-year-old.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
Twice.
Oh, I don't know who that is.
Twice. He got knocked up dose times. Twice.
Oh, I'm taking what you're giving me. I just don't know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well,
I've never heard of that.
Ooh, we have to cover Mary Kay then. She dead now, but you
yeah,
know.
I have no idea who that is.
It was like mid-90s, yeah.
Well, you have to remember, I was born in 1993.
But so. It was a big deal.
Okay, do you think my parents were telling their 2-year-old daughter about it?
No, but I'm just saying in general, like...
Oh.
It was, like, bigger than OJ. Like, I'm just surprised you never heard of it being a true crime
thing. She was a
teacher? She was a teacher. And she was 34 and he was her 12-year-old student.
Oh.
She went to, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, you're going to have to enlighten me on
that. Yeah, I'll enlighten you. Well, dang. I'm going to have to figure out what state that was in.
I missed a groundbreaking case, apparently.
It's sickening. But anyways. It was a May 1st, 1990. Smart returned. Oh, wait a minute. Hold on. Yeah. May 1st, 1990. Smart returned home after a long and tiring work meeting. Little did she know that her life was about to take a devastating turn. She stepped into her condominium. She was met with a scene of utter chaos. Her once orderly home had been ransacked, leaving a trail of destruction in its wake. The horror didn't end there. Smart's heart sank as she discovered her beloved husband lying lifeless, brutally murdered on the floor.
Ruh-roh.
Oh, actually, it doesn't say on the floor, my bad. But she found him dead. That's just it.
I'm going to assume on the floor. He wasn't on the ceiling.
Right. So...
That's a whole new different type of plot.
You can tell we're tired. I'm sorry. We should be
on the floor.
Sorry. So, the peaceful town of Derry, New Hampshire was shaken to its core by this murder because it's not something that they normally had happen. So, as the investigation unfolded, police officials were confronted with a perplexing crime scene that resembled a botched burglary. However, the truth behind this gruesome act would soon reveal a web of deceit and manipulation. Pamela found herself at the center of the storm when she was accused of seducing a 15-year-old boy. Can we guess who that is? Why, of course. It is William.
That little boy.
It is William Billy Flynn.
Yeah.
The allegations against her were chilling. She was said to have coerced Flynn into carrying out the unthinkable act of killing her own husband. It was claimed that she had threatened to withhold any further sexual encounters unless he committed this heinous crime. Shockingly, Flynn agreed and enlisted the help of his friends, Patrick Pete Randall, Vance J.R. Latimer Jr., and Raymond Fowler. That's right.
Mm-mm.
He got 1, 2, 3 other boys to help him so he could continue getting his sexual encounters, Sarah.
That's disgusting. I hate it here.
Together, they executed the murder, with Flynn pulling the trigger while Randall restrained the victim, Latimer acting as the getaway driver, anxiously waiting outside in the car along with Fowler. The details of this tragic event sent shockwaves through the community, forever changing the lives of everyone involved. In the midst of the investigation, J.R. Latimer's father made a significant discovery within his own home, a .38 caliber pistol. Recognizing the importance of this finding, he promptly handed it over to the police, suspecting it could be the murder weapon. Meanwhile, an anonymous tip emerged pointing towards a teenager named Cecilia Pierce, who might possess crucial information regarding the case. The authorities wasted no time in reaching out to Cecilia, and after some initial discussion, she agreed to cooperate. And by wearing a concealed recording device, hoping to capture incriminating conversations with the suspect, Pamela Smart. As fate would have it, Cecilia's efforts proved fruitful, and she managed to obtain evidence that would further strengthen the case against Pamela. And at precisely 1:05 p.m. on August 1st, 1990, Detective Daniel Patiller made an unexpected entrance into Pamela Smart's office. Startled by his unannounced arrival, Pamela immediately recognized him, as she had done numerous interviews with him. Curiosity and concern filled the air as she inquired about why he was visiting. And he basically informed her that he was there to arrest her.
What?
For the murder of her husband.
Damn.
Yeah. Basically, he told her that they had found out who murdered her husband and that she was being arrested for her husband's murder, for first-degree murder. And so, she questioned the charges, and she was arrested basically without incident and taken to the Derry District Court, where she was formally arraigned before being confined in the Rockingham County Jail. So, the trial of Pamela Smart attracted widespread attention and garnered significant media coverage as the stakes were high, like a potential life sentence awaited her if she was found guilty. And as the arguments began on March 4th, 1991, District Assistant Attorney General Diane Nicolsi painted a vivid picture of the teenagers involved, portraying them as innocent victims of a sinister woman with murderous intentions. The prosecution's narrative depicted Pamela Smart as a calculated mastermind who manipulated her young lover, and Nicolsi alleged that Smart seduced Flynn, enticing him to kill her husband all in an effort to avoid a costly divorce and to secure the $140,000 life insurance policy.
Yeah.
$140,000.
That's not life-changing money.
Right.
It's not worth it.
I mean,
it's a lot of money, but it's not life-changing.
Right.
Especially if you can't get it because you're going to be convicted.
Right.
So.
Never mind. I'm not going to say what I was going to say.
What, make sure you don't get caught?
I was going to say, make sure, like, OJ, if the glove don't fit, you must quit.
Yeah.
Oh, but during her testimony, Pamela admitted to having the affair with the teenager, but vehemently denied any involvement in her husband's murder. She claimed that the responsibility for the crime solely rested on Billy Flynn and his friends, who acted out of anger when she expressed her desire to end their relationship and reconcile with her spouse. I'm sorry, I believe the kid. Smart maintained that she had no prior knowledge of the murder plot and played no part in its execution, while Flynn professed to have fallen in love with Pamela from the moment they met. Cecilia Pierce, a witness at the trial, would testify that Pamela and Billy were initially just friends, and it was around February that Pierce noticed a shift in their relationship. And as Pamela confessed her love for Billy, and Flynn himself asserted that he was a virgin until he engaged in a sexual relationship with Pamela Smart. So he just fell in love.
That's gross.
One,
because he's a whole baby, but two.
Yeah, I mean, a sophomore in high school, he's what, like 15, 16?
He's like 15. He could even be 14. Who knows?
Yeah. So March 22nd, 1991, the Rockingham County Superior Court delivered its verdict declaring Pamela Smart was guilty after a 14-day trial. The charges against her for being an accomplice to first-degree murder, conspiracy to commit murder, and witness tampering. The evidence that was presented against her was substantial, and with her co-conspirators testifying against her and the secret recording capturing her conversation that seemed to contradict her previous claims that she had no involvement. Despite her assertions of wanting to reconcile with her husband and her professed ignorance of the boy's sinister plan, the jury found her guilty. Smart, however, maintained that the media played a significant role in the influence of the outcome of her trial and subsequent conviction. It is worth noting that the prosecution had the option to charge her with capital murder, but they ultimately decided against it. She received a mandatory life sentence in... a mandatory sentence of life in prison without the possibility of parole. So Smart is currently serving a life sentence at the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women in Westchester County, New York.
Fun fact, I have a high school aged friend that was imprisoned there. So, I've talked about it before. That means that she was in prison with Mary Beth Denning.
Probably, yeah.
No, remember?
Yeah, she was.
Mary Beth Tinning was in prison until 2018 in that same facility.
Yep. So, she is in a unique case in New York as she is the only person incarcerated under a interstate compact between New York and New Hampshire.
Yeah, it basically means you can be in prison in one state.
To one state, yeah. We used to do that, too. We didn't have a facility to house our females. So, we used to have to transfer our females until our new jail opened to a different county to be held. That's basically what it means. It's the responsibility. Like, you basically, this is my prisoner. This is this state's prisoner. But we are taking her, like, they're paid, basically they pay them to take care of
them. Yeah, because Bedford Hills is an all-female prison.
In 1993, Smart was transferred from the New Hampshire State Prison for women in Gosford to Bedford Hills, which is a maximum security facility. State officials explained that the reason for her transfer is due to the lack of secure enough facility in New Hampshire to house her. Given the high profile nature of her case, it was deemed necessary to provide higher security measures. While Smart has not admitted to her crime, she has acknowledged that if she had not engaged in the affair with Billy Flynn, Greg Smart would still be alive today.
Yeah.
During her time in prison, they said that Smart has utilized her skills and knowledge to make a positive impact, though. She has dedicated her time to tutoring other inmates, helping them acquire new skills and knowledge. It says, additionally, she has shown great determination and commitment by completing two master's degrees, one in literature and another in legal studies. These degrees were made possible through private funds provided by Mercy College. She has also become an active member in the National Organization for Women, advocating for the rights of women in prison. Through her involvement, she strives to bring attention to the unique challenges faced by incarcerated women and work towards creating a more equitable and just system for them. Pamela Smart, though, did endure a brutal assault in October of 1996, inflicted by two inmates, Graves and Miller. As a result, she had to undergo surgery and have a metal plate inserted into her face.
Damn.
The attack occurred because the inmates believed she had informed on them. They thought she was a narc, y'all. Dang. Regarding their prison relationship. Ooh, it was a love triangle, I bet.
Mm-hmm.
Both inmates were convicted of second-degree assault and subsequently transferred to different prisons. And in 2003, Smart faced further challenges when revealing pictures of her were published in the National Enquirer, leading her to be placed in solitary confinement. Despite her claims of unfair treatment, her lawsuit was ultimately dismissed. The following year, Smart and fellow inmate Carolyn Warmus filed a lawsuit against Bedford Hill officials alleging sexual harassment and assault by a guard who coerced them into posing for suggestive pictures that were published in 2003. So, which, hey, somebody had to take them pictures and get them out. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like 2003, yeah, we had cell phones, but we didn't have Wi-Fi like we do now.
No.
Like, you had to, yeah. So. Oh, sorry, I lost my spot. Okay. Albert Johnson, a renowned attorney based in Boston, Massachusetts, has gained national recognition for representing high-profile clients like Patty Hearst and F. Lee Bailey. I don't know who they are, but apparently he represented them.
Mm-hmm.
Despite his efforts, Smart's federal habeas petition was rejected by a federal judge in 2002, a decision that was later upheld by the first U.S. Court of Appeals in April of 2004. Prior to this federal appeal, Smart had exhausted all avenues for judicial appeals at the state level. And in July of 2005, the New Hampshire Executive Council unanimously denied a pardon request, leaving Smart without any conditions the governor may have imposed. So at this point, she has exhausted all of her leads to try to get her sentence reduced or to get out.
Mm-hmm.
It is says that she is currently pursuing a financial settlement from the state of New York. The New York Attorney General's office is now considering a settlement offer for Smart's 2006 lawsuit, which accused prison officials of unfair treatment after revealing scantily clad photos of her in a jail cell in a 2003 issue of the National Enquirer. Assistant Attorney General Maria Hartfuss has requested a 2-month delay from the federal court judge Robert W. Sweet to allow the state to evaluate the settlement offer, which includes legal fees, and was proposed by Smart's attorney, Nicholas Brooke. In her lawsuit, Smart alleges she was subjected to a 2-month-long, 23-hour-a-day lockdown as a result of filing the complaint following the publication of the photos. Despite her circumstances, Smart remains hopeful for a life beyond prison and dreams of having children.
She needs to stop.
Unless she's having children with a jailer, I don't think she's going to have them.
Nope.
On November 5th, 2009, a U.S. District Court judge awarded her $23,875 from the state of New York.
Ew.
That's all she got.
We owe her nothing.
Cecilia Pierce, a former intern of Pamela Smart at the time of the murder, made a significant move by signing a lucrative $100,000 option for the screen rights to her story. So this lady done sold out and they made a movie. This decision not only highlights the gripping nature of her experiences, but also showcases the immense interest and potential her story holds for the entertainment industry. By securing such a...
Girl, we don't care about you!
Substantial deal, Celia has not solidified her place in the narrative, but she has also opened up a world of possibilities for her story to be shared with a wider audience.
Celia, you're ratchet as hell. Knock it off.
I do think there was like a...
I'm watching this guy make Play-Doh pancakes while listening to you.
Listen, it's okay. Otherwise, I was sitting there playing Block Builder last time. I mean, I was listening. So Cecilia did sell her rights, though.
Yeah, but so. Cecilia Ghetto, because you were barely in this damn triangle. Like,
calm down. Remember, she's the one that told. She's the one who wore the wire. Still,
like,
she knew.
She knew long before. Like, you're only in it because you had a big mouth. Not saying that she shouldn't have.
Yeah.
But girl, this is about two separate people, and you are not in the love triangle. Yeah. Knock it off.
So, in an interview with ABC News, Pamela Smart expressed her fear of growing old and spending the rest of her life in prison. You should have thought of that before you had your husband killed.
Girl, for a 15-year-old?
She even mentioned that she would have preferred the death penalty over a life sentence.
That's because you can't cut it. Like, that's what holds me back from a lot of crimes. Because I know I wouldn't make it in prison.
Right. Same.
They don't have my lotion or my nasal spray in prison.
Serious, like, I need my nasal spray.
No, I do. Like, there's certain luxuries.
You and Amanda, would go down without your nasal spray.
Me and Amanda would go down together with one singular
bottle. I guess Brad, too, right?
Yeah, Brad's addicted to nasal spray, too.
I've never met people who were addicted to nasal spray until I met you three.
I'm addicted to nasal... It's not even a joke. Like, it's a legitimate addiction.
Oh, I've seen you. You're just like...
Ma'am, how many times have I done it today?
Like, that's what I'm saying. I don't obnoxious. Say anything.
What are you going to say? Stop using it. I bought it.
No, I'm just saying in general, like, what do you say? Like, it's not like she's over here snorting cocaine. Like, I know, it's just nasal spray.
It's I mean, if quality choice nasal decongestion.
Who was it that said they used the Dollar General kind?
Amanda!
Yeah, that's what
she said. That works just fine.
No, but I thought she said, like, that was her favorite brand.
No, that is her favorite brand.
I'm like, wait a minute.
This is from Ingles.
I'm like, you have a whole, like, you know you have a nasal spray addiction when you have a whole particular brand.
Mm-hmm. I'm also addicted to Suave Cocoa Butter Lotion. You will never, ever, ever, ever catch me with a different lotion. Ever.
So, I don't use Suave products. And I'll tell you why. I mean, I use their deodorant sometimes.
I don't have a choice. This is a problem, okay?
Well, no, it's not that. So, I'm going to tell you why. I used to use Suave shampoo. And then all of a sudden, I used some Suave shampoo. And then I started digging like a dog. And I don't know what they changed in some of their products, but once they changed that, Alicia's over here digging like a dog with fleas.
Dang.
Straight up like a dog that's never been treated for fleas and has an infestation of family.
Oh, that reminds me. I have to give Zoro his flea and tick medicine to
him. No. Yeah, Alicia doesn't use Suave. But anyways, we're almost at the end, guys. We're almost there. So William Flynn is currently serving his sentence at the Maine State Prison in Warren. During his time there, he has achieved his GED, which good for you, dude. I mean, you know, he's actively participated in charity work and has worked as an electrician within the prison. So at least you didn't squander your life away in the big house there, bud. You got your education and you can electrocute yourself.
Congratulations. Here's a fork.
Shove it in the outlet. No, I feel like this dude... I feel like he got duped, though. I'm gonna be honest, kind of like the little fellow with Gypsy Rose, man. They just got duped. Yeah, it's not. Listen, I'm gonna tell y'all. I'm gonna fill you in on a secret. All right, this is Alicia getting real right now.
Did you get duped?
No, I did not get duped. But I'm gonna throw this out there for all of you young guys who are willing to throw yourself away over a piece of booty. It's not worth it. I promise.
I bet you it's not even that good either. I guarantee you. It's
for
not
everyone
worth it.
Out there, I promise you, there are five more that you can find that will give you booty just as well.
A lot of them.
analogy.
Well, I don't want to say it in case there's any littles listening.
If littles are listening, their parents need to
talk. Well, I mean, there might be not like little, but I mean, we might have some middle schoolers that are listening. Listen, you would be amazed. I was listening to Two Girls, One Ghost the other day, and there was an 11-year-old that wrote a ghost story into them because she listens with her mom. When
we had Two Girls, One Cup. Anyway.
We'll see. They're making fun of the name. 100%. That's how they got
it. No, I'm saying, yeah, like, when I was 11, yeah, we didn't have podcasts to listen to.
And that's what they're saying.
We just got sent video links and we clicked on them. So I guess this is a more wholesome outlet.
So I'm just trying to say, it's not worth a piece of poochang, all right? Punani. It's not worth it. The punani, the hoo-ha, whatever you want to call it. Okay. What is it that one lady calls it? Her downstairs...
There was a trend on TikTok where they were calling it the kitty meow-meow.
Yeah, that was it. Her downstairs kitty meow-meow. That's what she referred to it as. It is not worth... life in prison. Because I promise, when you get to prison, you are not, there is nothing like that there. So, don't do it. Just don't. It's not worth that. Billy, I'm sorry you got duped, bud. And I promise, I know she was your first. It said that. They clearly said that. First and only woman.
Your face.
Jail since the 90s. I'm not saying anything. You're right. You're the first and only woman. Just the sheer horror because Billy was young. I'm sure he was somebody's.
He was somebody's first in prison.
They took that V card, I'm sure.
It's funny.
I didn't mean for it to come out like that, but it did, and I'm sorry, guys.
Do I need to keep reading for you?
No.
Good, okay.
Poor Billy, though. I know. Oh, yeah. But in 2007, he requested a reduction of his sentence after serving 16 years. He explained that he had made personal commitment to not seek a reduction until he had spent as many years behind bars as he had spent free. He took the opportunity to apologize to Greg Smart's family, which you should. You should be very apologetic to them. Mm-hmm. However, the Smart family opposed his request, and on February 12, 2008, was denied. Good.
People are probably like, this isn't even funny. I promise you, it's funny.
If you were in here right now, you just had to be here.
If you ever started laughing and then looked at somebody else and laughed again.
I'm crying. We're just stating straight facts. Although his parole eligibility date was reduced by 3 years to 25 years, making him eligible for parole in 2015, another inmate, which was Patrick Randall, had his minimum sentence reduced by 3 years as well, making him eligible for release in 2015. But they're still in jail.
Wait, so what happened?
Nothing. They didn't
get the appeal.
Their sentence got reduced by 3 years. That was it.
Well, let me tell you. We saw... firsthand, Mary Beth Timming go up for appeal 13 times before they let her out. So the possibilities are not zero.
But it gets better. Just wait.
Great.
In March of 2023, Pamela Smart was denied her sentence reduction. They were like, nope. The boys, we're going to let them have 3 years in production. And now she's going to sue the state. I'm sure she's going to sue them because they didn't treat her fairly because she was a female. Just wait. Remember, she was doing all the legal rights for women in jail. Yeah. I'm sure she's going to try to sue them over that neck.
Mm-mm.
Pamela Smart, I hope you have the day you deserve in
prison. I did not know her case. I do know the case of Elizabeth Smart.
She's just going to out and out have her husband killed by her little...
The little lover. her baby
I think lover. He was 15. I think that's what he
yeah,
was.
Yeah,
he was
about 15. Yeah. I mean, he was a sophomore in high school. I mean, she wasn't that much older than him, was she?
She was 24.
I mean, I that's think, older, yeah. But she wasn't like a 45-year-old woman.
She wasn't like Mary Kay Letourneau trying to lay it down with a 12-year-old. Let's be honest. Pamela Smart, like, she wasn't ugly. I mean, I can see why he was attracted to her. I don't know what he looked like, though. But, I mean, back in the day, she wasn't ugly by any means.
That hair was bad. Anyway.
But that was common.
She died.
Yeah, I knew she died. I didn't know she died of cancer. Well, you didn't even know who she was until today. Are you ready for the sad part? Okay, we're going to go into a quick Mary Kay Letourneau, okay? We got a couple minutes.
Yeah.
So, Mary Kay Letourneau, she was 34. Mm-hmm. Billy Vallow. Mm-hmm. Billy Vallow was his name. Billy Vallow, something like that. Vallow, I don't know. He had a weird last name. He was like a Hawaiian.
Billy Vallow.
Vallow. He was like a Hawaiian descent.
Mm-hmm.
He was 12. She was inviting him over to her house to have sleepovers with her kids. And she, in the meantime, was sneaking out of her bedroom at night from her husband to go have sexual encounters with this 12-year-old child who was the same age as some of her kids in her living room. but once they found out, at that point, she was already pregnant.
So she had, okay, so it says she had her six kids.
Right.
But are some of them his?
Two of them are his.
Two of them are his.
So she had the one daughter.
Mm-hmm.
They gave her, like, a super short sentence. I can't remember exactly what it was. But basically, she got a slap on the wrist.
Yeah, she had her baby. Said that she got 7.5 years in prison.
Well, to begin with, though, the first time she got caught with him, she got a slap on the wrist, basically.
Oh,
they were going to let her go.
Do this.
Yeah, and she was already pregnant. She gave birth to the child. Then she's, like, she gets out. She gets caught with him a second time. Now, to begin with, she had her husband believing that that baby was his, the first one.
Even though it probably looked nothing like him, because
this guy's
guy
Hawaiian.
Is clearly
like
darker.
Hawaiian. Yeah. And so she ends up getting out of jail, and she's not supposed to have any contact with Billy at all.
Mm-hmm.
And she ends up, they get caught in a car in the middle of the night. In her van, I think it was, by police. That encounter led to her being pregnant for the second time. Her daughters, their daughters are just like a year apart. So literally, she went to prison for 7.5 years. Something like that. Like you said, she gets out of prison and they get married.
Yeah, they were married until she died, basically.
Yeah, they had separated for a bit, but she got cancer and she was really sick. And he stayed by her side. But since then, Billy has apparently must have moved on relationship-wise because he just, him and his, I don't know if it's a girlfriend or who, but they just had a baby not long ago.
That's crazy. He's the same age as my older brother.
Right. He's like just a couple years older than me. Like,
he's,
that's why
he's going to be 41 this year.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to be 35. He's just like 6 years older than me.
That's crazy. Well,
I mean, I'm closer in age to him than he was his wife. I mean, let's be honest. It's weird.
Yeah. Well, thank you for both of those stories, because I didn't know about either of them.
Yeah, so her husband, like, divorced her, and her dad was, like, a senator or something in the state
I'll
where they're
go
from.
Through this.
I don't know.
They're from California.
Dang it, I already done California.
Yeah.
This might have to be a Patreon episode. A sick and twisted tale of a perverted teacher.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for Pamela Smart.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
I appreciate the laughs at the end that was fun. After a long day, after the killing fields, I needed that.
Yeah. Well, check us out on Facebook, Instagram, Patreon, and TikTok.
Right.
Let us know what you think.
Yeah.
We will put up our poll in a little while
Well, the poll will be up before this is...
It doesn't matter. A poll might be up when this comes out. I mean, who knows? Because this will come out in the middle of March.
Well, yeah, this will come out in the middle of March.
So, yeah. But anyway, thank you so much. I hope everybody enjoyed that. Do you have any parting words for the fans?
It's not worth it, guys.
Your Cheerio hole will never be the same.
Don't do it. If she wants you to kill somebody, that's a red flag. Just move on.
If she is an adult and you're a child, that is a red flag.
Huge red flag. That's like a flag flying like back.
That's a flag. That's a red flag holding a mini red flag that's waving a minier red
and
flag.
Hold it. That's and
screaming waving. In a megaphone. Red flag.
And with a checkered flag attached to the very tippy top going, no. Oh, Jesus. It's been a long day. So thank you, guys. Lock your doors. Don't play with Ouija boards. You know the drill.
Yeah. And as always, there's probably something sinister right in your own backyard.
Dun, dun, dun!